You'd want to turn to Gospel of John, chapter 8, and start at verse 51. Partially what drew me to this text today, not so much the actual what I'm going to read, but just the thoughts maybe I'm going to bring forth. You know, I remember one of the first things back when I was like 8 or 9 years old, what I wanted to study was the Trinity. I wanted to nail that thing down. I mean, what God's part is, what the Holy Spirit's part is, what Jesus Christ's part is. And it seemed like even at that young age, at first it went along really well. And I knew what God had done, the Holy Spirit's doing. And then you start running into these verses where it says Jesus is doing this. And now, wait a minute, that's what the Lord was doing. And next thing you know, it's all jumbled up. And I've come to the complete conviction that you can't nail down the Trinity, even though I tried to do that for a while. Well, another thing that I've, I say wrongfully, but maybe there was good that's come out of it. I've just struggled quite a bit to understand how Jesus is incarnate man here on earth and was still God at the same time. He is our example to follow. I've used it numerous times that he's the path that we follow, especially like the aspect where he said that he came to serve and not to be served. He came to minister and not to be ministered unto. That's a great example for us to follow. And here's, if there was anybody ever on planet Earth in all of time of mankind to be served, would be Jesus Christ. And yet he says he came to serve. And it's a great example for us. I'm convinced that part of humanity's fallen problem is we want to be served and not to serve. That's just part of human nature. It's part of depravity. It's part of our corruption. And Jesus is showing that aspect to us and how that you can do that. And we follow Jesus. We have songs like that we follow in the footsteps of Jesus, the pathway, the steps that make the pathway glow. You know, some poetic license there. And giving us some kind of different ideas, maybe not scriptural, but there's no question there's some of that in it. So with me, to see that Jesus was a man and Jesus was deity at the same time, I struggled with that. I'll be honest with you, I guess I still struggle with it, but not to the point I did, because I really tried for a while, Brother Marty can testify to it, to say he laid his deity down when he came to earth. And he was a man, sinless. I never went far enough to say that he was a corrupt man. That's not what I was meaning, but that he was just man. Because if he was deity, if he was God, then why did he pray? People that pray are folks that need something. There's something, you know, that's... There's just a need, and we need help, and you're going to God for that need. He went to the Father often. So those questions kind of came up to me. And then when I read over in John chapter 17, and he asked the Father to give to restore unto him, it was his prayer shortly before he's crucified to restore unto him the joy that he had before the foundation of the world. And I go, see, there it is. He left his deity in heaven. No, it doesn't say that. There was a joy that was left behind, a glory. Didn't say deity. So where am I at now? Well, I'd say his deity, and he was God. He was man and God at the same time. And how to decipher all that at this precise moment, I have no idea. But I believe he was both, and only God knows how to do that. So I think this kind of gives us an insight into maybe some of that. So let's read here in John 9, or John 8 and 51. We'll read through the end of the chapter. Verily, verily, I say unto you, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. Then said the Jews unto him, Now we know that thou hast a devil. Abraham is dead, and the prophet, and thou sayest, If a man keep my saying, he shall never taste death. Art thou greater than our father Abraham, which is dead, and the prophets are dead? Who makest thou thyself? Jesus answered, If I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father that honoreth me, of whom ye say that he is your God. Yet ye have not known him, but I know him. And if I should say I know him not, I shall be a liar like unto you. But I know him and keep his saying. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. Then said the Jews unto him, Thou art not yet 50 years old, and hast thou seen Abraham? Jesus said to them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. Then took they up stones to cast at him, and Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. I think you can get a flavor here of what's going on. Actually, this dialogue between Jesus and the Jews started much earlier in the chapter. And Jesus even told the Pharisees, even told them in there that you're liars and you're of your father, the devil, who is the liar. And that's some serious strong language that's happening here. And these guys have put themselves in a position as leaders of the Jewish nation, and Jesus is there kind of disrupting the situation, especially with the common folks. And here he is in the temple teaching, and he gets to this point in visiting with them and says, Verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. Interesting language. You know what? Little bit of grammar I picked up in school. If there's a few things that I should have paid better attention to back in grammar school, I don't know if that's why that's called that or not, but back yonder in those early years, maybe I'm talking to like Jason and Sarah and Natalie and Amos. Some of the things y'all are learning in school right now of how to structure a sentence and what verbs are and nouns are and adverbs and what grammar is, learn it. It may be hard, but here I am 60-some years later wishing I'd paid attention to it. But I got it on this one a little bit because I learned that if it's a past tense in the language, it stays past tense through the whole sentence. Or I think I learned that. Am I wrong without that? I mean, am I goofed up now? Okay, I got some heads nodding saying, yes, you're right. Well, look at this. Before Abraham was, I am. That's strange language, isn't it? I mean, that in my little brain, it like twists it somehow. It's like, what? Before Abraham was. They're saying before Abraham lived. Before he was conceived, maybe. Before he was born. Before Abraham was, I am. We just don't, that's just not talked about. Before Abraham was, I am. Abraham was like maybe in the neighborhood of 2,000 years before Jesus Christ. Of course, we read there, and the Pharisees were like a little bit before, Thou art not 50 years old yet. And you're saying you knew Abraham, 50 years as opposed to 2,000 years? It's ridiculous. And they knew he's a liar. They caught him in a lie. He even said, that Abraham looked to see my day. Look, Abraham, by an eye of faith, saw 2,000 years in the future and saw Jesus' day. And he rejoiced and was glad. Here we are 2,000 years beyond that. And by an eye of faith, as Abraham had an eye of faith for the future, We, by an eye of faith, are looking back about the same distance. And we rejoice and see his day. Do we not? Do we not rejoice in who this man was and what he's done for us? Who he is for us? The price he's paid for us? It's just wild to me. But as I've done this series on the different names of Jesus, obvious, here's another one. Jesus calls himself I Am. Now, in my little world, and going back to when I was a kid, telling you a few minutes ago, and trying to nail down what the Father did, what the Holy Spirit did, and what the Son, you know, and the categories for this, I had placed back over there, you all know where the I Am came from, do you not? I mean, it's very familiar, I think, to most of us. Just a brief history of it. Moses had fled Egypt, went to into the Midianite area, found a man by the name of Jethro, and ended up, Jethro became his father-in-law, and he's keeping his father-in-law's sheep, and it says that he one day wandered to the backside of the desert and came near Mount Hebron. I think that's right. I should have looked that up. Sinai is what we would call it. And as he was over there tending the sheep, he looks over and he sees a bush burning. And yet the bush was not consumed. When I see a bush burning, in a few moments, if it's just a little old bush with, you know, twigs, a few leaves, it's just kind of like a flash in a matter of 4 or 5 minutes. It's over. Why? Because all of the ingredients for a fire had been met and there was no more fuel for the fire. Yet Moses saw something, that this bush is burning, but the bush is not being consumed. In other words, the fuel, it's not converting the solid part of the cellulose fiber in that bush into carbon and gassing the rest off. That's not happening. And Moses said, you know, I'm going to turn over and take a look at this. And I have enough curiosity in nature and like seeing different things that are unusual as I ride along or walk along or out in nature and see different things. You know, just as an example, down in South Georgia, a few of these folks over here will know what I'm talking about, especially on the live oak trees and those big old branches out. And there's a fern that grows on the top of those trees. It's called resurrection fern. And it's an air plant, okay? So it has to, it gets most of its, well, maybe it's not total air plant, but I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't have any roots in the ground, and it's not a parasite. It's not sucking life out of the tree, so it's somewhere in between. But when it doesn't rain, you see that plant, it's totally brown. The leaves are kind of crispy. It looks dead, dead, dead. Just take a nice Saturday afternoon shower. And in the morning, that stuff will be all perked up and green. It looks like resurrection. Resurrection fern is what's grown. That's fascinating to me when I talk about something in nature like that. I love seeing that. When it gets dry and I look at it and then it rains, I want to go out and see that happen again. Just fascinating to me. Well, if I saw a bush burning over there and it's not getting burned up, as it were, I'd go look at it. I want to check this thing out. Might be a little scary, you know. This is against nature. The resurrection fern, after I understood it, made some sense. But anyway, there it is burning. And y'all remember as this was going along, God spoke out of the bush. It says an angel of God spoke out of the bush. Well, you know, who's the angel of God? Maybe that's something we should look into. I have my thoughts. I'm not going to talk about it. I didn't study that part. But there it is. God speaking out of the bush, saying, take off your shoes or your sandals. You're on holy ground. And you remember he talks to him about the aspect that he has seen the affliction of his children in Egypt, and that the slave masters were so cruel to the Israelites. And Moses, I'm going to send you down there, and we're going to free the children out of slavery in Egypt. And And Moses, you know, gets in his little way, which I'd have done 10 times worse, that he couldn't speak. And in a way of trying to get out of it, he's also saying, Lord, I don't even know your name. They're going to ask who you are, and I don't even know your name. And what's God say to him? You tell them that I am has sent you. I am that I am has sent you. Definitely says his name. Well, in my thinking, in my world, I put that under the category of God the Father, that God said that. Well, as I'm doing this study, I'm surprisingly, you know, over here in verse, in this John chapter 8, Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am. Well, was that Jesus over there? Or is this the three in one God? And we can connect things back and forth. I'm not going to say. I don't know. Before I did this study, I'd say it was still mostly God the Father. After the study, I guess I'm going to say I'm leaning the other direction. But I don't think it matters. Really, I don't. I thought about this aspect of it in my mind when I was categorizing the off or the works of the Trinity. I put creation under God. But do you know what it says over in the first, what John tells us in the first chapter? Just go over there and look quick. And I can't find it as fast as I thought I could. And it says here in the first part that there was nothing made that was made without him. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. That's Jesus Christ. There was nothing made that wasn't made, except it was made by him. So now here in my mind, I had creation under God, and first the third verse of the first chapter of John says, Jesus Christ, it's under his category. You go on a little deeper into the creation there, you get to the sixth day, and it says, let us make man. So it's not so cut and dried, maybe, as it were. But so this idea of God saying in the burning bush to Moses, I am, that is my name, I am. Jesus says to these Pharisees that didn't believe he was God. They verily just thought he was man. In fact, if you go back and read a little bit in this chapter 9 or chapter 8, it's as if the scriptures to me as I read them seem so contemporary with some of the politics of today. So here's these Pharisees. They're entrenched in not only the religious aspect, but the government aspect of the Jews there at that day, or the children of Israel that are there in Jerusalem. Obviously, Rome is really the political over all of them, but Rome's letting them kind of have their way to a certain level. And it's like this guy Jesus pops up, and they're like, who is this guy? People are following after him. We don't like this guy. He's saying things that makes us look bad. And it's like they sent Eyewitness News, a reporter, back to Nazareth to find out who this Jesus guy is. And they bring up in here that we be not born of fornication. Do you know what that's saying? They're saying that Jesus' mother, Mary, had an adulterous affair and became pregnant with Jesus, is what they're saying. And I guess there were some people back in Nazareth that truly thought that that's what had happened, that they knew that Joseph was espoused to Mary, but that they hadn't consummated the marriage yet. They hadn't had the marriage ceremony, just the dowry was paid, but they hadn't had the ceremony, and therefore, if she ends up with child, well, we got a problem here. And so apparently the Eyewitness News reporter went and found that out, came back to Jerusalem with this salacious information that this guy Jesus tried to cast, putting dirt on this guy and make him look. Is that not Is that not familiar with today? I mean, I'm not talking one political party to the other. I'm saying both political parties to each other in today's world. It doesn't mean it's one to the other. Both are trying to find dirt on the other one. And here it is, right here, 2,000 years ago. You know what I mean? It's interesting to me. So they're throwing this in Jesus' face. We be not born of fornication. Trying to tear this man's character down. They couldn't tear down maybe what he was doing. It's a little hard to tear down some of the miracles that's going on. That he tells a man that they know has been sick in his bed for years and rise up and walk. That's a little hard to tear down that this miracle has happened to a man that's blind and gives him blind sight, gives him eyesight. You know, so they're tearing now more at Jesus's character, and that you're a liar and that you're born of an adulterous affair and trying to tear him down. And Jesus, and they're like, and you claim that God is your father? I mean, this was preposterous to them. They truly did not believe this, that he, in his claim that God was his father. And he gets here and says, verily, verily, which means truly, truly. He said, I'm telling you all the truth. This is it. I say unto you, this is the truth. God, Jesus Christ, incarnate man, is saying to these folks, and I think to us, I think to me, to get the picture, even though I believe that God, that Jesus was God, and yet I wondered about the deity aspect, this clears it all up. Before Abraham was, I am. Well, let's just take an idea of what I am is even talking about. I am. Well, here he's talking about 2,000 years ago, before Abraham, I am. What about, you know, that was before. What about just, we don't have to go 2,000 years ago. What about yesterday for me? I can't say I am today about I am in yesterday. Before, well, let's just say before Saturday, we'll say Friday. Before Saturday, I am. No, I was over there. And what about tomorrow? I can't say I am in tomorrow, because it hadn't happened yet. It will be, and it was. That's how it is for me. That's how it is for all of us. Yet here's Jesus Christ saying, 2,000 years ago, I am. It's the same. 2,000 years earlier, it's the same person. And every day, I am. I am. I before the foundation of the world, I think we can go there. I am. There's really no time with God. It's just one eternal day. I don't understand how that works. He knows the end from the beginning. Somehow time's laid out in front of God. Here's the beginning and you know, all the way through Adam and Eve and going all the way through to when we get to the last one that's going to be conceived in this world, and time's no more. Yet God stands back away from that and is able to view it. It's I don't, you know, the way I kind of have it, I've got this big book at home. It's really not a book. It's about 4 foot tall, and you just unfold it, and it's about 8 foot long, and it's a timeline of the religious history of the world, and starts, you know, at the beginning of time. The guy that did it was like in 1870 or 1890, so it isn't up to date. But I can stand back from that, and I can see. That's kind of my idea of it. I don't know. I am. There's no change. Yesterday, I was who I was. I'm different today. One, I'm a day older. I'm a day closer to dying today. You know what I mean? I ate different food this morning. It may react with me different. I'm different today than I was yesterday. Maybe I'm smarter today by learning something. I don't know, and I was yesterday. But I'm not I am. I hope you get the picture. There's no change. With us, there's change. The only thing that's constant in this world is change. We have a song about that. How does that go? Change and decay, and all around I see. O thou who changest not, abide with me. That's who we're talking about. Thou who changest not, the I am. Three letters, two words. And we learn from that there's no change with God. Zero. Well, I think then if we start looking a little bit deeper under this thing, if there's no change and we keep going back, you know, to before Abraham, we go back to creation. We go back to before creation. Well, now we're in what men call eternity past. With eternity, there's no past or future. It's just eternity. But we'll say eternity past. If he changed, if God started somewhere back yonder, there'd be a change. Would there not? There'd just be no God, and now there is a God. That'd be a change. Maybe he didn't change from that point, but I am, I am. So I now understand it, and it's same going the other way. God will never cease to exist. There's no change with God. So the I am is no change, therefore he has to be eternal. That's the point I'm getting to. Just out of those two little words, three little letters, I understand that he changes. I am the Lord thy God, I changes not. Therefore, you sons of Jacob are not consumed. We trust in that. I mean, because we're so much change, isn't it nice to grab hold in your mind of something that's stable? And our lives are like a ship, you know, on a sea. I love going out on the ships, what little I have out on sea, but I've never really desired a big storm to come up while I'm out there on the sea. How about you all? Do y'all want to try to do that? Go through a hurricane out on the sea? No, thank you. Not interested. I watch some of those YouTube videos, and they've got up there in the deck, and that ship dips down, and the wave is taller than the ship, and it comes up and splashes all over them. Just no thank you. And what about those guys back in the wood, you know, the Mayflower and all that stuff coming over? No thank you. I am not interested in that. But our lives get like that sometimes, do they not? You're just like, David talks about being overwhelmed. That's a nautical term, meaning that it's just the waters have come in, your ship's fulling, and you're sinking, overwhelmed. Do you not feel that way so many times in your life? Yet here's somebody that is no change, and he's eternal, he's constant, you can count on him. What a blessing for us to have that. He is no change, he is eternal. Well, if he's eternal and there's no change, then he has need of nothing. He needs nothing. He is self-sufficient. We are not that whatsoever. We are dependent. I couldn't wait for breakfast this morning. I was hungry when I went to bed and didn't want to fool around with it last night. Got up this morning, had some good gravy and biscuits, and I enjoyed it. And here in a little bit, I'll be hungry again. I am not self-sufficient. And if it gets a little cold, I want to turn up the heat. If it gets a little hot, turn on the air conditioner. You see what I'm saying? We are dependent people. We're dependent on everything, basically. And not only that, our universe is dependent. If it wasn't for the word of his power holding this place together, I don't think it'd stay together. Men are worried about an asteroid hitting planet Earth. Somehow, I'm not too worried about that happening. I think God knows where all the asteroids are at. I think he knows the forces that are all involved, because his voice, the power of his voice, is holding it all together. This universe, this time, place, is held together, is dependent on the Lord. If God were to go on a vacation or go to sleep, as was suggested about those gods with Elisha back there in that day when they were cutting themselves and trying to bring fire down from heaven, and he suggested that maybe your God's gone asleep, maybe your God's gone on vacation. If our God did that, I think this planet would fall into, the universe would fall into chaos. He is self-sufficient. This time, place is not self-sufficient at all. We've learned three things now from this, that there's no change in the I am, that he is eternal, and he is self-sufficient. Just in those two little words, I am. I think it's tremendous to be able to see that. I am. And it's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and for the rest of your lives. and for the rest of eternity when we're over yonder and this planet is wiped out and it's all over and we're resting in the presence of the Lord forever, we're still dependent. He is still independent. He is still self-sufficient. It just gives me comfort to think about who I am. Before Abraham was, I am. So, now what do I say? This has to be deity. That's what it has to be. This is the deity side of Christ. There's aspects that's separate, and yet it's there. I have to go that route. It must be that when he's talking to these guys, he says, I am God. I am the I am. And those folks were so tied into that I am back yonder. And here was this physical man in front of them that they thought was born of an illicit relationship. And they just, it was blasphemous to them. And they picked up stones to kill him, is what they did. And he, you know, some people say he just became invisible, walked out. I don't think he had to do that. I think it's a little bit like Mary. You remember Mary in the garden after Jesus is resurrected, and she saw what she thought was the gardener. It's Jesus Christ. She'd walked with him for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, and yet she thought it was the gardener. Says, where have you laid him? And he said to her, you know, Mary, and her eyes saw him and said, my Lord and my Master. So he just walked out, however it was. So this is the I am. Well, there's seven sayings in the book of John. It's interesting that this is all in the book of John. It seems like John, over the other three gospel writers, is trying to show us more than what the others were, that this man, Jesus Christ, is God. I think John is trying to show us that. We go back to John's writing back here. And he even starts out his first of the three little Johns in the back there, the first John. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon with our hands, have handled of the word of life. For the life was manifest, and we have seen it, and we bear witness and show unto you that eternal life which was with the Father and was manifested unto us. That which we have seen and have heard declare we unto you, that ye may have fellowship with us, and truly our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. These things write we unto you that your joy may be full. Somehow John is more focused on Jesus Christ, not so much as the man, but as God, as the I am of who it is. And he wants us to have that understanding so that, as he said there, these things write I unto you that your joy may be full. It is a joy to us, especially when your life is that ship that's in a hurricane and it's being tossed to and fro. If you know who the master of the oceans is, no matter how much the oceans will rise, the master is with you in that ship. And if he says, peace be still, the trouble you're in may go away. Or the trouble you're in doesn't change a bit, but you're at peace with the trouble. It's joy to us. It's a joy to understand who this man, Jesus Christ, is. The I am. Before Abraham was, I am. Well, in John, Jesus says 7 times, I am. Besides this one, there's actually 8 times. So the other 7 are, which I won't turn to them, won't even give you the verses. It's just, he says, I am the bread of life. He has food for us to eat, has nothing to do with grinding flour and putting some yeast and baking it. I am the bread of life. He sustains spiritual life. I am the bread of life. He's God. He's I am. He's deity. I am the light of the world. Has nothing to do with these lights or the sun. Yes, all of that stuff is because of him, had not been by him. But he's talking about in a spiritual sense that he's the light of the world. This world is darkness. We are darkness. And ye who sometimes were darkness, Paul tells us in Ephesians, that in our human nature, our depraved nature, our corrupt nature, that it's darkness. There's no light there. There's nothing good there. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. And when you're born again, that's a part of him that you now have light in you. Jesus says, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door of the sheep. This was brought more to me, understanding this. Down at LaGrange, there's a Bible history museum, I guess you'd call it. It's no big thing. It's just done privately. It's nothing big. I've not been to the Ark, but from what pictures I've seen and talked to people, it's not magnificent like that. They've got some indoor stuff, but outside they have this little walk-through area, and this walk-through area shows different aspects, like what the tent that Abraham lived in might have looked like. I don't know. They don't know, but some idea of what maybe Abraham, as he traveled along with his donkeys and his herds or whatever, and the tent that they'd put up, just kind of how that would have depicted that. And there's different aspects. They even have a pretty good sized area there for seating, but it's kind of to give you an idea of the Roman Colosseum. But there's one there that just jumped out at me. I was thankful for it. It had a fence area, and it had, I forget, sharp sticks or something sticking out of these stones and concrete. But over here was a gap, like between those two seats, there's a gap that you can walk through. And it says that Jesus is the door. As he says here, I am the door of the sheep. In those days, there were sheepfolds. In other words, there was a corral, as it were, that we would call it. And at night, the shepherds would bring their sheep and put them in the corral to keep them safe at night from thieves and from wolves and lions, tigers, and bears. I don't know, whatever. But sometimes they had a door there. I mean, an actual gate of some sort. But my understanding is a lot of time one of the shepherds would stay there and keep the sheep in. At the same time, they were kind of the watchmen, that if something else came along, they could warn others, or could defend all of the different sheep. And here is Jesus saying, I am the door to the shepherd, to the sheep. It's our entrance to him. He says, I am the good shepherd. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine. That's Jesus talking. I am. He is God. He is deity. And I am these things. I'd like to look deeper into those things. And you'll probably hear more of those as time progresses. And I still feel the same way. But I kind of thought after I read those that it wouldn't do any harm to think it this way. Scriptures tell us that God is love. It's his essence. Well, if he's talking about himself, he'd say, I am love. What about mercy? His mercies. Where do you get mercy? You're going to find mercy on earth? If you remove God, maybe we need to have an exclusion here or a caveat. You take God out of this, off of this planet, and his work and born again aspect and all that, just human nature here on planet Earth, and what do you have? Is there any love here? Zero. He is the source of love. What about truth? You'll find no truth here. He could say, I am truth. That's where all truth is. It's where, when we go to the scriptures, all other books, you're going to have to keep some kind of a screen up for things that may not be true, that you filter it out. This book, you don't have to do that. It's truth. He can say, I am righteousness. He's right doing. He is righteousness. If we have any righteousness in ourselves, it has to come from Him. When we're born again, I believe that as I was born, conceived of my Father and received the natural body aspects, and then also maybe some characteristics of how He walks, you know, through the years, those things I received of my Father. When you're born again, we're receiving spiritual markers and identifiers. We've talked about it as faith, but there's love, joy, peace, meekness, gentleness, goodness. Those things are all from God. That's who God is. And so I could say, Jesus can say, I am just, or I am the just one. I am grace. I am mercy. It's just a beautiful in my little mind to think about, and never have before in my life. I knew the I am's statements were in the scriptures. I knew that He told the Pharisees that at one time. But just this week, going a little bit deeper, maybe peeling back a little bit of the layers of the onion. And I say especially that when He said, before Abraham was, I am. I see Him. Here was a man, but He was showing He is God. He is deity. How all of that plays out, I can't answer it. So if you come up and ask a lot of questions, maybe I can answer one out of 20 or 30. I don't know. We'll find out if you come up that way. But I know He's God. And I always, you know, I've never really questioned that He wasn't God. But I see it maybe a little differently, a little deeper, maybe a little more understanding that He is God. I am. Before Abraham was, I am. No change in the I am. The I am has to be eternal. The I am is self-sufficient and therefore has to be deity in my way of thinking. God bless you all very much. Thank you for your very good attention.